with locations in Boise at 3957 North Mississippi Avenue and in Kearns at 3101 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, serving traditional American breakfast and brunch. Both locations are open daily from 7:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Lunch was provided by Atlas Pizza, located at 3570 Southeast Division Street, open 11:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. or later every day. More information at atlaspizzapdx.com. Dinner was provided by Di Nicola's, located in the Creston Kenilworth neighborhood at 3520 Southeast Powell Boulevard. Di Nicola's authentic Italian restaurant has been a family-run Portland institution for over 40 years, serving classic Italian cuisine and pizza, open daily from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. or later. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of another PDX Music Video Festival and concert on Saturday, April 13th, from 5 to 10 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Another PDX Music Video Festival and concert is an all-ages event featuring 90 minutes of music videos from 26 Portland music artists. There will also be live performances by Skulldive, Camp Crush, and Sam Dinsmore. Again, that's another PDX Music Video Festival and concert on Saturday, April 13th, from 5 to 10 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland.
We have here in the studio Jenny Odell. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
All right. A Bay Area artist that has just written a book called How to Do Nothing, Resisting the Attention Economy. First of all, welcome to KBOO and thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess the big question is, what do you mean how to do nothing? I know that's kind of a big question to start out with, but that was the most striking thing about the title.
Right. I mean, I guess I would say first off that I'm not suggesting to you do literally nothing. It's sort of a rhetorical device to kind of just push against traditional ideas of productivity and the kind of cult of productivity that we live in. So you'll notice if you read the book, obviously, like some of the activities that I describe, like for me, bird watching is obviously not doing nothing, but it also appears unproductive from a certain point of view.
You kind of set the book up as like a how-to guide, I feel like. I wouldn't even say like a self-help book because it's definitely, I feel like that's such a strange term in these days. Yeah. But
well, it's been co-opted, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's nothing really wrong with the idea of of self-help inherently, but I think a lot of self-help books tend to be quick fixes, and they also kind of don't address larger systemic issues around the problem. So it's really important to me to position my book against books that are sort of like, how to look at your phone less. Like, my book is so not that. Mm-hmm. You know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, a lot of self-help books are commodifying people feeling broken. So mm-hmm. they wouldn't, you know, want to step away from unbreaking that person.
Right.
Or whatever. And I feel like in your book, it's not presupposing that people are broken. It's sort of like, given the moment that things can be okay for just a few moments out of the day.
Yeah.
And that we all sort of deserve that time.
Right. And I think it's also, you know, if you look at, again, like a everyday self-help book, it also puts the onus on the reader. Like, if you can't make yourself happy, then it's not the book's fault. It's your fault, you know, mm-hmm. or it's not like capitalism's fault. It's your fault. And so I think for me, it was kind of important to step back and kind of ask the question, just like, how did we get here?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is part of the book. And then, you know, the rest of the book is like, what do we do with that?
Right. And it's definitely, I was, I think ever since I started reading your book, I just sort of started looking at things a little differently. And I ran into a paper from the 1950s. I won't go off on too far of a tangent. But I thought I was reading this article because there were several articles about like 45-year-old woman cures herself, and I was like, well, that's interesting. And and I was looking at it, and it took me a moment to realize these were all advertisements that people had been feeling tired and worn out. And it was, one was like, maybe your daily cup of tea and coffee is killing you, and drink this wheat drink. And it took me a while, you know. It seemed so informative that I was like, oh, I'm reading an advertisement that is not just like saying, why are people so tired?
Yeah.
It's handing out these quick fixes instead of saying, why don't you take care of yourself and like take a nap or something like that, you know?
Right, right.
In the first part of your book, you have a chapter titled Surviving Usefulness. I found that to be a really lovely passage about, could you talk about the tree in Oakland?
Oh, right, right. So there is a tree in the Oakland Hills that has different names, sometimes referred to as Old Survivor, and it is our last old growth redwood. So in the 19th century, we lost all of our old growth redwoods, you know, to logging, and for a long time it was assumed that they were all gone. And then I think in the 60s someone came across this holdover, and it turns out that the only reason it was still there was that it was considered a runt by redwood standards, so it's still really big, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it was sort of gnarled. It was an odd shape, and then it was growing in a hard place to get to. So in a way, it was protected by its uselessness, you know, from the point of view of a logger. And I really, when I found out about that, I was like, oh my God, this is a real life version of the story that I talk about also in the introduction, which is a Taoist story about the useless tree.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, that is a story about a carpenter who sees a very large, very gnarled tree, and is like, oh, sort of disdainfully, look at that tree. The only reason it got so big is because it's so useless. And then the tree appears to him in a dream and basically calls him out and says, like, who are you to call me useless? You know, you're a mortal man. You will die. Like, uselessness has been very useful for me. So both of those kind of provide me with a model for kind of turning yourself into a shape that can't be so easily appropriated.
That's super deep. Just the idea of people having to be useful all the time. It's tied into our identities,
mm-hmm.
you know, like gig economy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eating lunch, standing up, and just like, you were talking in your book about the advertisement of it was like a cup of coffee and
the Fiverr ad, the one where it's like you eat a coffee for lunch,
right? Yeah. But that's also something like the self-congratulatory
attitude in our
times, and that how often you can put every single ounce time to something quote unquote useful. But I just really loved that tree analogy, because you said it perfectly, the not being able to be commodified by being useful.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of Taoist stories are funny for that reason. And there's a lot in the book that's sort of funny because there's this paradox, right, where for me there's a punchline where when you zoom out from something and it's actually something very different, right? So it's like that whole dream sequence is about a very, you know, much broader view of usefulness. Like one of the details in the story is that the tree is actually so big that it shades thousands of teams of oxen, you know. It is like useful in the sense of care, but having that perspective applied to this carpenter's like extremely narrow idea of usefulness, which is just like timber. I think that there's something there's sort of a dark humor about realizing how narrow our idea of usefulness and productivity are, and that, you know, honestly, if we were all logical algorithms, we just wouldn't sleep. We would find a way to not sleep. You know, there's all these vestiges of things that are useful in ways that we can't quite articulate in a very obvious way, that you can see all of these assaults against right now. Like, there are people actively trying to develop drugs so that you don't have to sleep, you know?
Oh, wow. That's, I think, an agreed upon form of torture as well. Like,
yeah,
not
right?
Sleeping,
exactly.
Not being able to sleep enough. Aside from everything we've been talking about, what inspired you to write the book? What is happening that made you feel like it was necessary to embrace this concept of being able to, quote unquote, do nothing? I feel like we've explained enough that doing nothing isn't doing nothing.
I honestly came to it not intentionally. It was something that I was doing without realizing it, and then sort of wanted to answer the question of why. So in late 2016, there were, you know, we had the election, right? And then quickly following that, in Oakland, we had the Ghost Ship fire, and a lot of artists and community, like really important people in the community, died. And so there was this kind of pall hanging over at least the communities that I'm part of. I saw a lot of artists and writers unable to make anything, and then on top of that, feeling guilty about not being, like, not giving themselves the time to mourn and just rest. And, you know, these things take time to process. And meanwhile, you know, you look at Twitter moments and it's just like shouting in your face all the time, all these horrible things, right? And so there's this push and pull of like, I want, you know, I'm concerned and I want to be involved and I want to do something, but at the same time I feel so disassembled that I'm just paralyzed, and I'm actually, you know, speaking of useless, actually feel useless, you know. So around that time I just sort of observed myself, that I was going to this rose garden that I live 5 minutes away from, and I had gone there a lot. I really love that place. I'd gone there a lot, but I was going there almost every day. Kind of any spare moment that I could get, I was spending there, and I was just sitting there and doing nothing. And I just, you know, saw that that was not quite a decision. I was doing that almost like a survival tactic or some sort of instinctual thing. And so I ended up writing a talk for basically like an art and technology conference called How to Do Nothing, that was trying to answer the question of like, what is the utility of doing this, or why do I feel it necessary to do this? And that talk, which was later an essay, really uses parts of the garden as metaphors for the things I end up talking about. So the importance of public space, where you're not a customer and you're not a user, you're just a person. And the architecture of things like labyrinths or parks or kind of spaces for free wandering. And then also just a celebration of maintenance and care over the sort of fetishization of innovation, because, you know, I'm in Silicon Valley, or I'm near it, and I grew up in it. So it's kind of pushing against that as well.
When you were talking about the enjoy something, it seems like such a commodity sometimes.
I mean, even if you're not enjoying it, I think there's, you know, like I talk about Pauline Oliveros and her practice of deep listening in that same kind of section. And she talks about the difference between the mindset that our culture promotes, which is a very judgmental mindset, needing, you know, the Twitter version of this is like having a take on everything immediately, versus this other mindset that she's interested in cultivating, which is almost like complete receptivity, but also listening outward and listening inward. So for her, deep listening was, you know, listening to everything that it's possible to listen to, including one's own thoughts. And I think, you know, like this space that you're talking about, and places like the Rose Garden, for me, it's where you go to practice doing that. And it can be really frustrating for someone who wants, you know, to have something to show for their time or wants to feel like there are results from, you know, from what they're doing. But ultimately, you know, similar to sleep, mm-hmm. cultivating those skills are very, very necessary, I think, for ultimately doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And you are listening to this interview between Grace Ann Smith, KBOO's news and public affairs producer, Grace Ann Smith, interviewing Jenny Odell, who is the author of How to Do Nothing. It's a great interview. And this is the time, my friends, for you to call KBOO. The number is 877-500-5266. And let us know that you appreciate news and public affairs on KBOO and that you are celebrating informational programming with us here on our semi-annual News and Public Affairs Day. My name is Ani, and I'm excited to be here on this spring membership drive with John.
Hello.
Good morning, John. It is a great time to join KBOO, don't you think?
It is an excellent time to enjoy KBOO. I enjoy KBOO. I'm just thinking about this interview and this book, how marvelous this is. Don't just do something. Sit there. Although right now we'd also like you to make a phone call to KBOO and participate in our pledge drive. But that philosophy is so important with just such a constant busyness, a constant how do we evaluate ourselves if we're not just always doing something to fill out our resume? And we mm-hmm. need to, you know, recognize and appreciate the peace of wild things, I think, and the peace of being still and the peace of just being. And that alternative voice is also really a part of what KBOO is about as well, of the of recognizing that aspect of life that is good and beautiful, and we need to appreciate it.
Absolutely. And one of the ways that you can show your appreciation for this kind of programming is by calling 877-500-5266 and becoming a member of KBOO right now. We broadcast news and information that kind of goes against the grain. It's, we fall outside of the common sense, right? And outside of that status quo, because we believe that life actually does need to be examined, that our communities matter, and that we can actually inform ourselves as we dig deep, as community members start to really look at the world around us and then parlay that into programming, bringing it forth on KBOO's airwaves with your support. So this is the time for you to step forward and say, yes, you want to be a KBOO member. You know the importance of this informational programming, and you want to make sure that it continues and that it does so with your sponsorship, with your support. Please become a KBOO member right now and dial 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm, and you can get a copy of How to Do Nothing with your $60 membership. We would love to thank you with a copy of this book. And again, that number to call is 877-500-5266.
And we value all of our contributions and however they're made, but the most convenient and powerful way to support KBOO is by becoming a monthly donor. Over 40% of our members give monthly, and on average donate $11.50 per month, for those of you who are taking notes and keeping stats. But this provides the most stable funding for the station, and the more money that we raise this way means less interrupted programming for you. And the other benefit is that you'll never have to wonder if your membership is current, since it will automatically renew until you tell us to stop. So please become a monthly donor today by calling 877-500-5266. That is 877-500-KBOO. And of course, all forms of contributions are welcome and can be tax deductible.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I'm really enjoying about the concept of How to Do Nothing, you know, how many times do you, is somebody saying, what kind of day are you having? You know, and you're like, oh, I wasn't so productive. I only did this and that. But that productivity, what is that about, right? It's generally involved in some sort of commercial activity. And maybe life is a little bit beyond that, right? Maybe life is a little more meaningful than just engaging in commercial activity. Maybe things like human relations, right? Mm-hmm. Human relationships, connection, and belonging, like belonging in community. Those things are super valuable. And you don't have to be in the hectic and busy world to actually fully appreciate human connections and your community. And right now, we here at your community radio station, we know that you have a place to belong. We know that you and KBOO are together in, at least, you know, in philosophy, at least you've already joined with your heart and with your mind. And now we're asking you to please step forward and make sure that our lights are paid. Make sure that the transmitter continues to transmit, to make sure that we continue to be a strong community resource so that we can reach out and pull communities together. We know that we are stronger than we are as individuals. So please add your strength to the rest of your community and other communities to support KBOO. Call us at 877-500-5266. You can also join online at kboo.fm. We are looking to raise about $700, and we can do that with your support, but it takes each and every person stepping forward to dial 877-500-5266.
Your work has led you to look at things differently and how to change the context. How can this be used for everyday people that don't necessarily create in the traditional sense? Mm-hmm.
I actually am not really a big believer in the distinction between an artist and a non-artist.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is just, you know, there are things that I do or other people do where sometimes I'm like, is this art? And then I'm like, actually, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me as long as it's interesting. So, you know, my example is always if you're a person who walks to work and you decide to take a new route, in a way, that is an art piece. I mean, you look at some conceptual art pieces or the idea of like the derive, and you could argue that that is a form of art, right? Like you just... You made something in the sense that you sort of constructed an experience, and I'm especially sympathetic to that because something I talk about in the book is my background is as an artist, but a lot of my work is drawing new connections between existing things, so I don't really make a lot of things from scratch. So I don't have this sort of like high horse idea of an artist. So I think that these kind of practices that I describe of practicing, listening, finding new ways to look at familiar things from new angles. And I talk, you know, also about the discipline of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think, you know, obviously anyone can do that, artists or, you know, whatever a non-artist is, and it will actually achieve, like, largely the same results.
So you were talking about the relationship between existing things already and drawing those connections. There's something that you talk about in your book, bioregionalism.
Mm-hmm.
Could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, so bioregionalism, as I understand it, is mm-hmm. Like a practice of awareness and responsibility to your bioregion. So that's sort of the ecological community in which you live. So some would argue like the Pacific Northwest is a bioregion. I mean, I think most people are sort of loosely aware of this, you know, certain areas, like large areas, have a character, and then you drive, say, into the desert. It's not like all of a sudden you're in the desert.
Right.
There is a transitional period, mm-hmm. but it's a lot like languages or even cuisines or cultures, right? Like there are identifiable kind of conglomerations of things in different places that you can learn about and kind of come to identify with. So, and I, you know, it seemed like it kind of became part of the conversation in environmentalism, like in the 70s, but it's also something that if you just look at like indigenous land practices or the way that the relationship that they have to their land is very similar, right? It's like deep familiarity with mm-hmm. the characters and actors of the space, human and non-human, obviously, and then identifying with that as a member of a community.
Mm-hmm. And this quote-unquote doing nothing, you speak of bioregionalism is also like as we get kind of stuck in these worlds of constantly being useful, we don't really notice the environment around it. As you said, the deep history of it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really interesting. You were talking lunch break on the wharf in San Francisco and then realizing it was this the scene of this huge unionizing of longshoremen on the West Coast.
Yeah.
It was just interesting that we, as you're talking, like, deep history, like, you don't have to be an indigenous person to find a deep history in a spot. You just have to do a little bit of research and see how we're kind of connected in this context, that even if somebody weren't to be from the Bay Area, them eating lunch on their break, this where they had like that union happening, is still just sort of a deep connection to the environment around you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to also, you know, note that it, you know, these days it is an economic privilege and other kinds of privilege to be able to stay in one place for a really long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, no one I went to art school with is still in the Bay Area. I mean, there's a few, but you know, everyone's moving around. So, and I also talk about, you know, my background as, you know, I'm half Filipino, half white, and so I'm sort of strictly speaking native to nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's true, like, you can not be from a place and you can decide to practice responsibility and awareness, and it's hugely rewarding. I mean, one of the problems that I have with the kind of the self-help version of, like, you know, trying to look at your phone less is, like, it's sort of a cold turkey thing where it's like, hey, stop doing this thing, and it's not giving you anything else to look at. And and my conclusion that I sort of come to in the book and in my own experience is, like, what did it for me was realizing how interesting everything that was actually around me was. And once that happened, I had less patience for, you know, being on the endless scroll, because meanwhile life is happening and I really don't want to miss that.
Right. You were talking about having dinner with your neighbor at one point, and how all of a sudden the street turned into this arena of life, you know?
Yeah.
Not just this place you scurry into to escape the rest of the world and go back into your sleep pod.
Totally. Yeah, and that's what it felt like, because, you know, I live in a really big apartment building, and those neighbors, they live in a house that's next to the apartment. But, yeah, you know, like, we lived there for 2 years, and I think, you know, we knew their names. But actually, we didn't know their names for a long time. And then we're just kind of, like, saying hi, you know, once in a while. And then they had us over for dinner. And, yeah, it was, like, this total I know it's very different for someone who lives in a community where it's, like, I don't know, probably normal to eat at your neighbor's house. But I don't live in a place like that.
No, I mean,
so
it sounds bizarre to me.
Yeah. And just seeing, like, the same street. Seeing my street from a slightly different point of view. And then thinking about how there are, you know, all these slightly different points of view on my street, and I am just one of them. And, like, there are all these people going to bed, getting up in the morning, going to work, having all, you know, their own universe of concerns that I could never fathom, you know. It's very disorienting, actually, in a pleasant way.
Oh, right. Whenever you were talking about bioregionalism and just, like, how you can tie yourself to your environment around you and become more aware of things in the history therein, there's a chapter in your book called The Ecology of Strangers, where it talks about just getting to know strangers, not necessarily stopping and having a conversation with everybody that you see on the street, but being exposed to strangers every now and then. And I think it can be easy to become so alienated from other people that it's certainly is easy to look at your phone. But it really, the idea of bioregionalism and the ecology of strangers that you were talking about seems to be very interconnected. Being aware of your surroundings, the parts of it that don't speak or aren't quote-unquote sentient, as well as letting contact with strangers color your perspective and your sense of place.
Yeah. I think something that those two things have in common is just a little bit of kind of dissolving the ego, where in both cases you acknowledge that you are not the sort of, I think I quote Alan Watts, the bag of skin, that you are not a bag of skin, but that you are, you know, you're in a world with other beings that are affecting you and you're affecting them, and that's not a choice. Like, that is always happening. It's just the choice is, like, whether or not to recognize it. So I think, you know, both in cases of, I mean, I almost don't even draw a distinction, right? Because I'm really trying to, undo the human non-human barrier in that chapter. So for me, bioregional awareness naturally flows from attention to strangers, because for me, strangers also includes like birds and trees. So yeah.
Is it of what you said about this Native American woman who's, how you were talking about how they describe nature differently, and the grandmother saw Mount St. Helens and said,
poor thing.
Poor thing,
yeah.
You know?
Yes. Yeah.
But on to the structure of the book, I feel like we should get into this a little bit. It's, the first one is The Case for Nothing, The Impossibility of Retreat, An Anatomy of Refusal, Exercises in Attention, Ecology of Strangers, and Restoring the Grounds for Thought, followed by the conclusion of Manifest Dismantling. I would like to get into the exercises in attention and the anatomy of refusal as far as the way how our attention is something that is being commodified that we could withhold. It's social media quite often requires us to be highly reactionary, where even if you consider yourself liberal, your friends are going to be putting so many articles on your feed. But
Right. Yeah, I mean, something that I was really amazed by in researching this book was there's a lot of work that's been done on things like persuasive design, which is like a whole subset of design that is just like so evil. It's just, you know, little things to keep you engaged. So like the little red dot thing, or like the little pop-up that's like, hey, have you looked at this? You know, it's like this whole subset of UX or UI. I don't know which one, but and so obviously that is designed to capture your attention, keep you on the platform. That's profitable for, you know, a company, but it also assumes, if it treats attention like currency, which it does, you know, like minutes spent or, you know, amount of engagement. Most currency is standardized, right? So it also assumes that attention is attention. There's only one type of attention, and it's fairly shallow. So one of the things that I'm interested in is developing other forms and like deeper, heartier forms of attention that are the less susceptible to those devices and those designs. So thinking in different scales of time and space that are a little bit less claustrophobically kind of focused around right now, what's happening right now, and then like what's happening now, what's happening now. And I think that that is one way to kind of resist that type of design.
Right. It's almost like a news feed with like lightning bolts coming out of it all the time.
Yeah. Although I have to just like recommend Facebook Newsfeed Eradicator, which is a Chrome extension that makes your newsfeed go away.
Wow. I'm writing that down.
I guess I would also, I don't remember if I mentioned this yet. I would just, I want to plug iNaturalist, which is that app that I talk about. It's an app that allows you to take photos of plants, and if you're good enough, you can get a picture of a bird or an animal. It will also work on that, but it's owned by the Cal Academy of Sciences, and it's amazing because, and it's also, you know, I talk about it in the book because it's an example of how important spatial and temporal context are. So the reason it's so good, you can take a photo and it'll give you some guesses, is that it's looking at, you know, obviously when you took the photo and where. So it's like if you saw a yellow bird, I mean, that could be anything, right? But if you're in Oakland and it's in the summer and it's a yellow bird, that already starts to kind of narrow it down. So I have just learned so much about just native plants and, you know, non-native plants that are growing in my neighborhood. I use that thing all the time. And it's and it's also been a stepping stone to kind of more serious and considered things like taking classes or going to, you know, the California Native Plant Society has like talks, you know, and it's really great to do that with other people. But when I'm just kind of walking around by myself, I love using that to just, you know, it really activates your curiosity.
And you brought up something that kind of blew my mind. It's not that I didn't know it. I just never really thought about it. As far as social media is not going anywhere. I feel like it's just going to, it's here to stay. But the concept that it could be kinder, and that right now the people that are running social media are making a huge profit off of it. It never occurred to me that Mark Zuckerberg is, like, you can't make a lot of money without doing something, without selling things or being exploitive. You can't make that much money. And I guess I'd always thought of Facebook as being this sort of innocuous platform or billboard, and you brought it up in your book that they make a lot of money, and I just had never put those two together.
Yeah, and they make a lot of money specifically on, you know, engagement, and engagement often comes out of things like rage and knee-jerk reactions. People, you know, I mentioned in the book that my most liked Facebook post ever was like an anti-Trump screed. And, you know, it's like, feels good to write that, feels good to get lots of likes. You know, I don't know that that's really contributing any, like, you know, did I do anything? Not really. I'm just sort of like throwing this thing into this super loud arena where everyone's just like shouting. Meanwhile, you have a company that's making like huge amounts of money off of this whole mess, right? So something that I, you know, try to think through in the book is, what if social media were more like a public utility?
Right.
Like something, I mean, I sort of experimented for the purposes of writing the book with scuttlebutt, which is, or it's actually patchwork, but it's a type, of social media that runs on something called scuttlebutt. And it's like kind of, I'm not going to get into it here because it's like kind of too detailed and technical, but basically it's like a form of social media that's completely decentralized, so it's non-corporate, but it also is, for that reason, it's so inert. So when you go to it, it's just like, it's almost like walking up to a landline. It's, you know, like I installed it and I was like, where's all the stuff? Like, and it made me realize that I expect social media to just feel like this crazy, like, shouting match,
right?
Like things trying to grab my attention, and it's like, oh no, like this is just a communication device. I kind of talk a little bit about, like, these other alternatives. Like, you have Mastodon, which is sort of like Twitter, but it's also decentralized and not really owned by anyone. So something that they say on their website is that it can't go out of business because it's not
in business.
It doesn't have the same, structure. And then I talk also a little bit about mesh networks, which is where, you know, that's, like, super decentralized. So just, you know, these are all just sort of alternatives that I think are useful to look at just to kind of think about what it would be like to have something, to have the useful parts of social media without the sort of advertising and profiteering part of it.
And you're listening to KBOO. My name is John, and I'm with Ani, and this is our spring membership drive. And thinking the interview there with Jenny Odell, author of How to Do Nothing, and I was thinking of a quote that I just came across this past week from Thomas Merton, his 1966 book, Raids on the Unspeakable. And he said, please excuse the non-inclusive language, but he wrote, "The universal and modern man is the man in a rush, a man who has no time, a prisoner of necessity, who cannot understand that a thing might perhaps be without usefulness. Nor does he understand that at bottom, it's the useful that may be useless and a back-breaking burden. If one does not understand the usefulness of the useless, and the uselessness of the useful, one cannot understand art, and a country where art is not understood is a country of slaves and robots." And I was just like, what? Thinking not only about Jenny, but thinking about KBOO, kind of turning things on its head, bringing us back to the values that we may have lost in this huge rush for profit in so many different ways, and why KBOO is so important to support at Community Radio. And so, and your chance to do that is now during our spring membership drive. We are raising money, about a goal of $700 for this program today. And we have a couple of thank yous. We want to thank Dean in Florida and Ruth, who have participated in our membership drive. And you can, too, by calling 877-500-5266 with a pledge of $60, $100, whatever it might be that fits your budget, but do so no matter what that is, 877-500-5266, or you can go online at kboo.fm or come in person, 20 Southeast 8th Street on Burnside and 8th in downtown Portland. We'd love to give you a tour of the building.
Absolutely. You can see how your money is put to service in, in serving the communities. I'm a little repetitive there. I was trying to come up with another word. I need another cup of coffee. But here's the deal. You come in, you can take a tour of the studios, and you can find out how you can participate even more at KBOO. You can become a volunteer. You can learn how to actually create radio as a program producer or somebody who is producing audio. It's a wonderful thing. And in fact, all of the training for that is actually free for our volunteers. And it is, in fact, free because you, our listeners, support KBOO. You support the training programs. You support the on-air presence. You support the phone app and the worldwide stream, the archived programmings. Your dollars support all of that. So right now is a great time to call 877-500-5266 and let us know that you are there and that you are actually caring about making the world a better place. You are listening to this interview today. Grace Ann Smith, a KBOO volunteer, has interviewed Jenny Odell, and she is the author of How to Do Nothing. It's a wonderful book. It's really made quite a big splash. It's gotten a lot of press coverage because it is such an unusual idea in this day. And when you contribute to KBOO at a $60 or more level, we would love to thank you with a copy of this book by Jenny Odell, How to Do Nothing. You know, you heard her talking, Jenny talking about bird watching a little earlier, you know, about other things that one can do with one's attention rather than to look at a screen and to know that your attention is being monetized in each and every click. That is, you know, something to actually focus on, the world around you, connecting deeply with that world and knowing that is reality, right? And so we bring you conversations like this that go against the grain of the status quo. It kind of breaks the current myth of how our society works. And that's fantastic because we need to keep doing that. We need to rock the boat because we need to change our course as humans on this planet. We need to reconnect with each other, and that is at the heart of this book. And I got to say, that is at the heart of community radio. It's reconnecting people. I know it is true for myself. When I was a younger person, when I was an adolescent and knowing I was different, knowing I was queer, knowing that I thought differently and had different ideas than other folks in my school, I felt super alienated. And I found KBOO and I realized I could connect with other people that had these same ideas and had a difference of opinions and a difference in identity. And it's a reconnecting force that is community radio. And that is one of the things that you are supporting. It's a lifeline to so many people that need that connection. Please call right now, 877-500-5266. Or online, you can join us at kboo.fm. And again, at that $60 level, when you contribute $60 or more to KBOO, let us thank you with a copy of Jenny Odell's book, How to Do Nothing. The most important thing to do right now, though, is to make that call and to support community radio. One more time, that number is 877-500-5266. Back to that conversation with Grace Ann Smith and Jenny Odell.
The usefulness of wild spaces, mm-hmm. and how there's so much industry going against, you know, unwilding the world, more or less. And yeah. He was saying something about how with each wolf kill, the predation on cattle goes up because it's so deeply disturbing to the wolf community that they generally don't hunt cattle. Mm-hmm. That blew my mind.
Yeah. That's, I mean, you know, really, I think something that I am so inspired by from any study of any part of ecology is just this appreciation for, you know, the interconnectedness of everything and these, like, strange consequences. Like, I mean, we're all going to be living through that now, right? Like, we're just going to get, like, weird weather all the time. And I was just talking to somebody who lives in LA who said that there's some type of butterfly that is just, like, I mean, there's huge numbers of it just mm-hmm. all over the city. And it's beautiful, right? But it's like, it's beautiful and strange. People sort of don't know what to do with this spectacle of these butterflies, which is sort of out of place and the result of so many imbalances.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I even remember it came up in one of the birding classes that I took where there's a bittersweet feeling when you see a really rare bird that is, you know, listed as a rare visitor in your bird book that is in your area because of something like a storm.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's a displaced bird. Like, and mm-hmm. so you're excited. It's like, wow, this is so rare and beautiful, and I've never seen this bird, but also it shouldn't be here.
Right, yeah. Quite often we're saying something isn't useful because we can't use it, you know?
Yeah.
Like the tree.
Right. Yeah, like yeah. specifically we can't use it. And it's so, mm-hmm. you know, I started watching Our Planet, mm-hmm. which is so amazing. And
is that the David Attenborough?
Yeah, the mm-hmm. new one. And at the end of the first episode, there's this kind of emotionally brutal, I think on purpose, long sequence of just collapsing icebergs. And it's like playing this really emotional music, and it's just like it's really hard to watch, actually. And I thought about it afterward. I was like, you know, the Arctic is a really good example of almost like, in the same way that we can't see sleep as useful, but we know that it's necessary. There are all these parts of the planet that we're like, oh, that's just wastelands, right? Or like. Right. It's not relevant to us because you can't build on it and there's nothing to be extracted there. And it like turns out that it's like maybe the most important place on the planet.
Right, as we destroy these things that aren't useful to us, it's just like completely makes us so vulnerable on the face of this. Well, it changes the world, but...
Yeah, and like that's why I love that the useless tree story so much, is because I think when the tree is showing up to the guy in his dream, like that's what he's talking about. It's like mm-hmm. you don't know what is and isn't useful for you.
Right, and we don't understand the wisdom of the earth. I feel like some people listening to this will say the ability to not do anything could be viewed as a privilege.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right, and yeah. I wanted to discuss that a little bit because you're not advocating, or could you go into that a little bit?
Right, so I think that that's a really important reaction to have, mm-hmm. and it's something that I kind of try to address at the same time in the book, where I acknowledge my own privilege as someone who, you know, long list of privileges, but a really, you know, obvious one being that I have a teaching job where I only have to be somewhere twice a week. So mm-hmm. Not that I am not working really hard on those other days, but just, you know, the structure of my life allows me to, you know, go sit in the rose garden. But in the chapter about the waterfront strike, I talk about how any kind of refusal has always required some kind of margin, mm-hmm. And that not everyone obviously has the same margin. So, you know, one of the reasons that protesters have often been students is because students, you know, can't get fired, or, you know, they maybe sort of, I mean, it's different now, but maybe have less at stake. Mm-hmm. And I kind of talk about how those margins have been shrinking for, you know, many groups of people for a while now.
Right. Yeah.
So everyone's sort of feeling the squeeze. And while I was writing this book, I finally read Nickel and Dimed by Barbara Ehrenreich, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, where she basically goes undercover as a low wage worker in various places. And, you know, it really brought home for me, it's like, are you going to tell a person who's trying to hold down three jobs that they need to go for more walks or they need to do nothing? You know, you mm-hmm. can't. It's just actually impossible. So so the kind of compromise that I come to is like, okay, we all have different amounts of margin in different ways. And so if you have some, I sort of suggest that you use it to, you know, regain control of your attention, but also once you've done that, try to work to open up margins further down the line. Because I think if, you know, you kind of combine them together, you get, you know, maybe you can sort of push on that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, how would you suggest that people use their own margin of privilege to affect others? Because you were talking about in the book, people were fighting for almost 100 years ago, or 90, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of rest, and 8 hours for what you will.
Yeah.
And how we've actually moved further from that. Mm-hmm. And it's, I feel like, almost been duped into thinking that 8 hours of what you will should be used to be ambitious and productive. And so mm-hmm, there's not mm-hmm. really much of a break anywhere. With everybody sort of being duped into that kind of cultural assumption there, how can we use our privilege to open up that margin for being able to present everybody with that sort of like right to relax every now and then?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think it's for me, it's sort of there's a vicious cycle that can be interrupted in a lot of places, but it is a pretty tight loop where it's like you have all of these forces and like this increasing precarity that's pushing on that attention and closing those margins. And then that fear is also driving the attention economy itself. Mm-hmm. So you have this this endless cycle. And so I mentioned in the conclusion that it's sort of like this big knot. And there are different places you can kind of pull on it. And I think it's also important to note that there is no one solution to the whole thing.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
I kind of loosely suggest, wherever you can enter this thing, right? Like if you are, you can advocate for like labor rights or mm-hmm. Indigenous rights, or you can lobby against, say, like persuasive design, or you could try to regulate, social media companies. Like there are all these, so many things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in order to do that thoughtfully, I think would need to kind of, it would be beneficial to kind of give yourself the permission to step away for as long as you need to think about what is most meaningful for you to do and maybe a more strategic way to do it and connect with other people meaningfully who also want to do that. So I described the book in the beginning as not necessarily an activist book, but a book that I hope contributes to activism mm-hmm. by kind of clearing the grounds or serving as a rest stop on the way there that I do think is necessary.
You say we absolutely require distance and time to be able to see the mechanisms we thoughtlessly submit to. They say you can't see the water that you're swimming in or the air that you're breathing.
Yeah.
This ability to step away, this privilege to be able to step away is absolutely necessary, I feel like you're saying in your book, to be able to even contemplate the problem.
Right. Right. Yeah. I don't think I talk about it specifically in the book, but I've always been, I don't practice it, but I've been interested in Aikido, mm-hmm. Where it's like this kind of intensely knowing your enemy
mm-hmm.
and acting in sort of like a not obvious way that could be very confusing, I love that kind of mindset. And I think the kind of, again, like it's a momentary or a temporary thing, but just kind of like stepping aside for your own sanity, but also to kind of turn around and really, closely observe the processes that you were just a part of that can allow you to act differently. It can also make different things seem possible, I
mm-hmm.
think. Yeah.
Yeah. It really ties back to the idea of rest, too.
Yeah.
Like if you don't have a moment to examine that.
Yeah.
Then how are you ever going to understand everything else? We've been speaking with Jenny O'Dell, who's here in town doing her book, How to Do Nothing, Resisting the Attention Economy. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And you were listening to that interview by Grace Ann Smith of Jenny O'Dell here on KBOO, your community radio station, your community connection. I'm Ani. I'm here with John. And we are asking you for your support this morning on KBOO because your call makes quite a difference. You make a positive impact on your communities with your KBOO community radio membership when you dial 877-500-5266. Step forward right now, and your contribution of $60 will, in fact, go a long way here at KBOO. And we would love to thank you with a copy of Jenny O'Dell's book, How to Do Nothing. It is a book about reconnecting and getting our lives back from the attention economy. A great interview. Thank you, Grace Ann, for your work here at KBOO as a KBOO volunteer. And right now, dear listeners, is your chance to thank Grace Ann and all the other KBOO volunteers for the time and effort they put into creating these programs that we can all benefit from. And that number again to call is 877-500-5266.
I love what the author of the book, Jenny O'Dell, was saying, that it's an activist book with the title How to Do Nothing. And I think how important that is to understand that, that the deepest level we are not doing. We are being, not doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so critical. You walk around town And I tell myself, I'm just going to watch people and see everybody on their phones, you know, just buried into that tech and finding, gosh, there's a sense in which this is a prison in and of itself. And so breaking out of that and being able to step back and look at the larger picture is so important. And that's part of what we want to do here at KBOO is to break out, to kind of shock the system a little bit, to awaken us to what is really real and what is really important, and especially in human relationships and our relationship with Earth and with all of the other Earthlings that inhabit Earth with us. And so your participation in our community effort here to be that is so important. So please give us a call and support Community Radio, that place to build community, to find a way helpfully to become human, hearing voices that are not often heard, alternative voices. And our phone number is 877-500-5266, and a copy of this book will be offered as a thank you gift for those who make a contribution of $60 or more. That's Jenny Odell's How to Do Nothing. And that number again is 877-500-5266. Or you can also go online while you're on the phone anyway and go to kboo.fm.
Absolutely true. And know that you are, again, stepping forward and saying yes to your community radio station, which is a great way of saying yes to your community because this act empowers us all. We are stronger together. And this is News and Public Affairs Day. Twice a year, we actually focus on informational programs that really dig deep about the society in which we live, about the state of our lives, and about how we can actually positively impact that world and make a difference. I know, I spoke earlier with Chuck Collins. John spoke earlier with Dan Kovalik. We've just heard the interview with Jenny Odell. We're about to hear an interview with Cory Doctorow. The day just keeps rolling on and will until 8 o'clock tonight. All, information-based, looking at our world from many perspectives so that we can make sense of it, so that you can put all of these pieces together in an analysis of your own that is informed by so many other perspectives. And that is the value of community radio. We're not just bringing you one perspective like you might get on any other station. When you tune into the mainstream media, each one has a specific flavor. Well, you know, KBOO is a little more like a kaleidoscope because each volunteer who is producing informational programming, public affairs programming, is doing it through their own lens and their own perspective. They have their own voice. And so when we add all of these perspectives together, we get a wonderfully complete view. And then you can put those pieces together in a way that makes sense to you, right? To live a fully informed life and then to take that next step and do something to make the world a better place. And of course, sometimes that doing something is actually doing nothing right? Because it is important to take that time, take that pause, and take your attention back from the monetization of the screen. It is an important discussion that you have just listened to, so please do call with your support right now at 877-500-5266 and say yes to community radio. We have to raise about another $500 this morning here in the next 5 minutes. We can do that when you call 877-500-5266 and give in a sustaining way. Start a monthly contribution to your community radio station. Right now, giving $10 a month makes a huge difference. It really does make a positive impact in this community radio station. We notice that level of support, because we are, in fact, a small organization and you are an important part of it. Please do call right now with your sustaining membership. Start that sustaining membership with just $10 each and every month coming into KBOO, knowing that you are, in fact, an important part of the solution. 877-500-5266 is the number to call, or online. Join us at kboo.fm, and just do it right now.
You know, in the diversity of the programming that we get on KBOO is related to the diversity of the listenership. And and the supporters and where the money comes from. So if it comes from, you know, Shell oil, you get a certain amount of diversity with that.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes from a variety of people from all over, not only Portland and Oregon, but all over the country, mm-hmm. It really makes a difference. And so that's why the programming here is so important and so diverse and so exciting, from hard news to art to music of different flavors, of different kinds. And so thank you for being a part of that. We want to mention that this membership drive is an opportunity to thank our listeners. And so our phone number to call right now to thank KBOO and to thank each other, 877-500-5266.
This is KBOO Portland. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Portland Underground Graduate School, a local independent learning community offering courses and workshops for continuing lifelong learning, scholarships and other tuition opportunities available. Course options and more information online at pugspdx.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of PDX Short Docs on Sunday, April 14th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Mission Theater in Portland. PDX Short Docs is a two-hour program of Portland-related short documentaries created by local filmmakers. This year, there will be several virtual reality short documentaries included in the 6 to 7 p.m. part of the screening. There will also be a Q&A with many of the filmmakers. Again, that's PDX Short Docs on Sunday, April 14th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Mission Theater, 1624 Northwest Gleason Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Gravy, with locations in Boise at 3957 North Mississippi Avenue and in Kearns at 3101 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, serving traditional American breakfast and brunch. Both locations are open daily from 7:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Lunch was provided by Atlas Pizza, located at 3570 Southeast Division Street, open 11:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. or later every day. More information at atlaspizzapdx.com. Dinner was provided by Di Nicola's, located in the Creston Kenilworth neighborhood at 3520 Southeast Powell Boulevard. Di Nicola's authentic Italian restaurant has been a family-run Portland institution for over 40 years, serving classic Italian cuisine and pizza, open daily from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. or later. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now. Mm-hmm.